So I'm going to be reading from the book of Isaiah, chapter 25, and I'm reading verses 1 to 9. Praise to the Lord. Lord, you are my God. I will exalt you and praise your name, for in perfect faithfulness you have done wonderful things, things planned long ago. You have made the city a heap of rubble, the fortified town a ruin, the foreigner's stronghold a city no more. It will never be rebuilt. Therefore, strong peoples will honour you. Cities of ruthless nations will revere you. You have been a refuge for the poor and a refuge for the needy in their distress, a shelter from the storm and a shade from the heat. For the breath of the ruthless is like a storm driving against a wall and like the heat of the desert. You silence the uproar of foreigners. As heat is reduced by the shadow of a cloud, so the song of the ruthless is stilled. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The Sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. In that day they will say, surely this is our God. We trusted him and he saved us. This is the Lord. We trusted in him. Let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Brian, thanks to you. Okay, well, over the summer, we've just been doing a little bit of a series, and each week we've been thinking about some of the services that they did, like 3,500 years ago, right back at the beginning of the church. God gave the church, like, a whole bunch of services, and said, look, go through these services, do these services over and over again, and as you get these services, as you understand them, as you meet Lord's Day by Lord's Day, what you're doing is growing in your understanding of what's going to happen when Jesus comes and dies on the cross. This is like, we're in ancient history sort of territory. This is like even before Jesus had lived, certainly before he died, and the church had all these services that they did that was all about helping them understand what was going to happen when Jesus died on the cross, and what it meant to be caught up into that, what it meant for that to impact them, what it meant for that to shape their life. All right. So the first of these, there was five of them, and the first of them, we call the burnt offering, or the service of the substitute might be a good way of thinking about it. And this is like the first one that they ever did. All right. At the start of every single day, the whole church, they celebrated this service, this church service together. And what it was designed to teach them about Jesus was, look, when you do stuff wrong, all right, the stuff we were thinking about earlier that weighs down on our conscience, the stuff that we know we should have done but we didn't, or the stuff that we did and we knew we shouldn't do it, right? When that stuff is there, it matters. Right? You can't just dismiss that. You can't just shrug that off. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? When we do stuff that's wrong against other people, right, we tend to minimize it. We tend to think, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't know why they're getting so worked up about it. I didn't even mean what I said. You know what I mean? It's like, ah, oh, they should just be able to forget about it and move on. But when somebody does something wrong against us, right, if somebody, like, steals from us, or someone, like, slanders us and they're like talking about us behind our backs, or they're lying about us, or they disrespect us, or they lose their temper with us, right? If we do that with somebody else, we're always like, oh, you know, it wasn't really that big a deal. I didn't even mean it. When they do it to us, man, that's a big deal. Do you know what I mean? It's like, now we demand a reckoning. And it's like, we don't go, oh, they didn't really mean it. Oh, it wasn't that big. It's like, no, it was a big deal. It really matters what they did. And I demand a reckoning here. And that's actually much closer to reality than when we're trying to play everything down and make it like it doesn't really matter. Right? In the Bible, the stuff we do wrong It really matters. It matters far more than we can even begin to understand. And there is a reckoning that is demanded. There's a reckoning that's demanded. And this ancient church service was all about us realizing that there's a debt. There's a reckoning. I used to work years and years ago. I used to work at Brixton Prison. And you want to talk about people paying their debts to society. That's where people go to do this stuff, right? Now, in Brixton Prison, C-Wing was the life wing, lifers. And some of these guys, they've been handed down multiple life sentences. And they were going to die in prison. They were never getting out. And when they died, there was still like decades left of their prison sentences to carry out. And it was really interesting. When you went on to the lifer wings in Brixton, it was dead quiet. Like everywhere else, there's noise and arguments and fights and everybody's giving it loads. You went on to the life wing, nothing. Absolute silence. Because these were guys who'd given up hope. They were never getting out. They could never pay their debt to society or to anybody else. And they just had given up. And this first service is saying, look, you like that? You can't pay your debts. You can't handle the reckoning. You need a substitute. You need someone who will stand in your place and pay that debt for you. Who will deal with all the stuff that you've done wrong. And Jesus is like, that's what Jesus is going to do when he dies on the cross. The second service is a service of the memorial offering service, or the service of remembering who I should be. All right? There's a service in the ancient church that was all about just remembering who God created you to be, what God created you to be like. Now, we might think, I don't need God telling me how. I know how to live, all right? I know how to live a good life. I know how to be a good person. I know how to make life work. I don't need God telling me to do it. Why would I need to remember that? Well, it's kind of exam results season, right? Last week, a bunch of kids got their exam results. In a couple of weeks, a whole bunch more kids are going to get their exam results. Think about it like this. If you went into an exam, all right, and you were like, well, I don't care what the examiner says, what he wants to know. I'm just going to write what I think should be a good exam paper. Right? Chances are you're going to fail pretty badly, irrespective of how good an answer you thought you were writing to the exam paper. Right? And it's like that with God. It's like, I don't need God telling me how to live. I know what I should do. I know how I should live. I know what I should be like. And it's like, well, you might get out there and live the life you think you should live. Be the person you think you should be. Treat people the way you think you should treat them. But if that's not marrying up with what God said, it doesn't matter how good you think you are, you're going to fail. Right? That's why we've just given the people here one of these, Luke's Gospels, a biography of Jesus. And it's just a token of saying, no, we're going to stop. Like the church thousands of years ago, we're going to stop. We're going to remember who God has called me to be. We're going to remember how God calls us to live. Because that's what we're going to be measured against. Right? That's what matters. What he thinks. Right? And when you read, it's interesting to me how many people, even people who call themselves Christians or would think of themselves as Christian, actually how many people have never stopped and actually read what Jesus says. Never actually watched Jesus living. Right? They're not familiar with his example or his teaching. And I'll tell you from my own personal experience, when you take the time to read what Jesus actually says about how we should live, how we should treat people, what we should do with our money, what we should do, all this stuff. When you actually read it, man, you pretty quickly get to the point of thinking, I'm just not like that. I'm nothing like Jesus. Right? He treats people in ways completely different from the way I do. He does life in a completely different way from the way I do. I'm just not like him. Which takes us through to the next thing. It's that once you've realized you don't measure up, that you're not like the person God created you to be, God called you to be. You don't live the way God called you to live. All those red cloths are kind of piling up on your conscience. Right? You begin to realize, I'm just not the right kind of person. I actually need to be different. And this is interesting because we often think, basically, we're like good people. Sometimes we do things wrong. Right? Jesus' analysis is totally different. Jesus is like, no. The reason you do bad things is because you're a bad person. The reason you do wrong things is because you're a wrong person. He says you're like this. You're like a jug of dirty water or a bottle of dirty water. Right? Doesn't matter how much water you pour out of that bowl, it's going to be dirty water. That's Jesus like, what, the stuff that pours out of you in the way you speak and think and deal with people, the way you relate to people, the stuff you do, the reason that stuff is wrong is because you're wrong. It's like you're dirty on the inside. That's why we need to be cleansed, like we were thinking about in Casey's baptism a minute or two ago. We need to be purified. The water, if you like, the water needs to be made clean so that what comes out of the jug is clean. Right? And it's this sense, the sin offering, it's like when Jesus dies on the cross, one of the things that he's going to be doing is creating a way of cleansing us so that we can be different in the future. We don't have to keep making the same mistakes. We don't have to be caught in the same patterns of behavior. We can be different going forward. All right? Which is all well and good. But here's the problem. The stuff that I've done wrong over the years, that's affected other people. There's a legacy of damage that I have left behind me in terms of my dealings with people. All right? There are people who are hurt because of things I said. There are people who are damaged because of things I did. Right? And it's all well and good me going, oh, well, I'm getting all sorted out. But what about the damage that my sin has done to other people? The legacy of my behavior to other people? Well, the next service that the church was being called to was a way of saying, look, you have to deal with that legacy. If you've stolen from someone, right? Sometimes it's got just hard cash value. If you've stolen from someone, go and pay them back. And give them a bit extra because you've caused them a bit of inconvenience and aggro, right? If you've lied about someone, go and find the people you told those lies to, correct it, tell the truth. Right? Wherever you can, deal with the legacy of your behavior, your attitudes towards other people. And again, this is something that we find the resources to do in the death of Jesus. All right, now, when you've done all four of those, all right, when you've been caught up in that cycle, the last one is the peace offering. Rachel was talking about this right at the start. This is such a great service because the whole thing is, if you've been doing all this other stuff, if you've been kind of caught up in everything that Jesus' death and resurrection means, right, can you imagine how good it would feel to know that your conscience was clean? Can you imagine how good it would be to know there was nothing hidden away that you needed to be ashamed of? Can you imagine how good it would be to know that you were at peace with God and you were at peace with everyone else? Imagine how good it would be to know that you'd done everything that you possibly could to deal with the legacy of your sin and the way that it's damaged other people. Can you imagine how liberating that would be? Like, you'd be totally free. No more pretending, no more lying, no more hiding stuff. You would just be completely liberated and free. Can you imagine how, like, the joy, that just the raw joy that you would feel knowing that that had been done? And so the last service that the church had to celebrate over and over again was the peace offering. It's just like, I'm at peace. I'm at peace with myself. I'm at peace with other people. I'm at peace with God. And the way that you did this in worship was you got all your family and friends together, right? And you just had a party. You just had a feast. You had a roast lamb dinner, basically. Right? You read through what you're told to do in the Bible for this service, and you basically get all your mates, all your family, all your people from your church over, and you just go, guys, you have no idea how good this is. Alright, and I want to celebrate it, and I want to tell you about it, and the way we do that as Christians is by throwing a feast for everybody we can possibly get to come and to be a part of this. Right? But actually, that feast, no matter how good that feast is, it's just like the starter course. Right? Because it's like a little foreshadowing. It's saying, look, one day, there's going to be a new creation. Right? Where God's going to have dealt, not just with you, not just going to have cleansed you, he's going to have cleansed everything. And you're going to be a part of that. And that there's a picture of it in the reading Judy just shared with us a few minutes ago. And it's pictured as a feast. It's a feast. And this little feast that we would have at church, just celebrating, oh, God's done this for me. Imagine the feast it would be when God's done that for everything. And that's what it's like. In our house, we have a little tradition in our family. When one of our boys goes away for anything, for work, or, you know, they go on a camp, or they hang out with their friends, when they come back, my wife Liz, she always bakes this lasagna, and it's called the coming home lasagna. And it's just, anytime anybody's away, even me, right, if I have to go away with work, or any of the boys are away, we come home, the whole family gets together, and we have the coming home lasagna. And it's just a celebration that we're together, and it's just good to be back together as a family. And that's what the new creation is pictured as. God has created a way to bring us back together as a family. And that's why in the Bible, the new creation is always presented to us as a feast. It's like a family coming back together and just celebrating together what God has done to enable us all to be there. You see, that, if you get that, you know everything you need to know about Jesus dying on the cross, which we're going to be celebrating in a minute. And you know what your experience should be as a Christian if you are caught up in what Jesus is doing when he dies on the cross. Now, I've been a vicar a long time. And over my life, I have known thousands of Christians. And it's amazing to me how many people who are Christians have some of these key things missing. Right? A lot of Christians, there's not a lot of joy. Alright? I've met Christians are so flipping miserable. Like, all they do is complain about everything. Alright? Or there's people who are like, no, I don't need Jesus. Yeah, I'm a Christian, but I don't need to trust, I don't need a substitute. I can stand before God and deal with, like, if I've done stuff wrong, I'll deal with that on my own before God. Or there's people who've never really measured up to, or kind of taken the time to see what it is Jesus actually calls us to be like. And they're still writing their own exam paper. Or there's people who've never been able to change. And they're just caught in the same cycle of behavior and attitude and relationships. And they just keep making a train wreck of it over and over and over again. And there's Christians who've never actually done anything to deal with the legacy of their sin. They just say, all I need to do is ask Jesus and he'll fix everything. And they ignore the bit where Jesus says, no, you've done some damage. You need to go and fix it where you can. But all of this is caught up in our experience of what it means to be a Christian. And it's one of the first things the church was ever taught. Now, we don't push people to make any big, fast decisions or anything like that. At MIA, at the churches like St. Andrew's, what we do is we just get up and we go, look, here's what God says. This is what the Bible says. If you need to think that through, you want to talk about it, we're here, we're available. Have a chat with me after the service. But we do periodically give people the opportunity to think some of this through more deeply. And Dawn's going to come and just give us a couple of opportunities that we've got in the next few weeks, actually, Some of this is kind of resonating, connecting with you, and you think, I'd love to work that through, find out a little bit more about that. What's really going on with that? Here are ways that you can do it.
Okay, so yeah, as Mark said, if you'd like to find out more in a really informal way, we'd love to talk to you after today's service, but we'd also like to invite you to come and find out more through a couple of things that we offer, and one of them is called Hope Explored. Charlene, who's Katie's mum, she's recently been through Hope Explored with us. We actually sat in my house and did it. It's just 3 sessions. And so I asked Charlene what she thought, and with her permission, this is a quote, just a sentence that she said. She said, I found this a great introduction to exploring the Christian faith. The 3 sessions had a capturing video, which were clear and simple and prompted good discussions. So it's just a chance to watch some videos together. We had tea and cake, of course, because, you know, that's what I do. And we had some really, it really is a chance for you to ask questions, whether you believe, whether you don't believe. It leads to, it's something that you can do to ask your questions. And as it says on there, we talk about Christian hope, a joyful expectation for the future based on true events of the past, which changes everything about our present, which is wonderful, isn't it? So we'd love to talk to you more about that. And we actually, through Hope Explored, we look at stories in Luke's Gospel, which Mark has been talking about this morning, one of the books of the Bible that tells us about Jesus' life. So please come and speak to us afterwards, and we can arrange to do it really at any time that suits you, and I'd love to welcome you to my house or here or anywhere else. So that's if you're a bit of an older person. If you're younger, ages 5 to 11, similar thing, but it's called Epic Explorers. And that's a chance to find out more about the life of Jesus and what it means for you, because, as has already been said today, you're never too young and you're never too old. It's 4 sessions after school. Again, we can be very flexible about that. Come and have a word with me afterwards, or you've got some flyers on your seat. Again, we'll look at the life of Jesus, but we'll have stories, crafts, really suitable for those ages. We really would welcome anyone and all of you, and of course we'd really love to share with you more. So thank you for that. And we're going to sing together again now, so we're going to invite Matt and Sam. We're going to sing Leaning on the Everlasting Arms.